Welcome to another episode of Indecent Behavior. On this episode, we'll be talking about postpartum depression, and our guest today is Tena, who is a gender and development expert. She's also the co-founder of Parentheses and a mom of an almost two-year-old boy, and she's a PPD survivor. Thank you so much for getting on this episode, Tena. I'm really excited and can't wait for you to share your journey, to shed more light on PPD, which is so important.
Thank you so much, Divya, for having me. I am very excited to be sharing my story, which will hopefully be of some help to other mothers and families going through the same thing.
I'm really grateful for your willingness to talk about this because it definitely is something that's really important and needs to be talked about more. To start off, can you just elaborate on what postpartum depression is and maybe just let us know when you realized you had PPD?
So there is a whole range of postpartum mental states, if you will, that a majority of women go through. The most common and the most kind of benign of them all being baby blues, which is basically signified by a drop in your hormones and changes in your hormone levels. And it's characterized by a lot of kind of emotional high and lows and crying and so on, and doctors will generally say that that is normal up until 3 weeks. Everything after that should usually be looked into, because by that point your hormones should kind of be self-regulating and so on. So postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety, which is also a very, very common consequence of giving birth and having small having newborns, are baby blues that lasts too long and that is not being mitigated by the hormones evening themselves out and by time passing. So for me, I have always been very resilient when it came to my mental health, and I think that if you asked any of my friends who is least likely to develop postpartum depression, most people would say me. It was also a very wanted, very planned pregnancy that my husband and I have been actively working on for years. And so I had all of the systems in place of support and so on. And yet I was absolutely miserable. But it's that kind of misery that kind of takes over and you really don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. I was also extremely angry. I had bad anxiety and intrusive thoughts, to the point that I couldn't sleep at all, and I didn't sleep for weeks on end. It got so bad that I started getting hallucinations at one point, and crying and crying and crying, and homicidal and suicidal thoughts that were very, very intrusive. So I knew that that was not normal, and I knew that there is, luckily, I was well aware of the fact that there is help out there and that it's nothing to be ashamed of, and that a lot of women go through that. So when I went for my 6-week checkup with my gynecologist, I came to her and I told her right away, I have postpartum depression. And she started laughing and she was like, oh, of course, Tena, you self-diagnosed. But just talking about it and being open about it and speaking first to her, who said, listen, there are medications. I will put you on them if you don't feel any better in 6 weeks. But for now, let's try therapy for 6 weeks. Then I went to speak to my baby's pediatrician, and I also told him, the baby's thriving, I'm not, I have postpartum depression. So I've made sure that the systems of support were put in place, and I also reached out to my friend who's a psychologist, and she connected me with a therapist who specializes in maternal mental health, and so I started with therapy pretty much immediately. So for me, the symptoms of postpartum depression were really the anxiety, the intrusive thoughts, constant crying, and extremely low mood, complete lack of sleep, and not just, oh, newborn moms of newborns don't sleep, but like really zero sleep, and homicidal and suicidal thoughts that were on repeat, and really a feeling of no joy. It is a very dark, lonely, scary place, especially at the beginning, before you actually start getting adequate help and reach out for help.
Wow, I am in absolute shock because I didn't know that the symptoms of PPD and postpartum anxiety can be that intense. the no sleep for weeks on end, like you've experienced being suicidal, hallucinating. I'm just in absolute shock and really a little upset about the fact that we don't hear about people talking about enough, because I was reading prior to discussing all of this with you that in India there are actually more than 10 million cases per year of PPD, and the fact that we're all still a little unaware, not a little, very unaware, is really disheartening. So like you were saying about baby blues, right? After 3 weeks, the mood swings sort of are supposed to get better. Do you think a lot of women don't really understand what baby blues are, and when, say, post that 3 weeks, it doesn't get better, they start to reflect and question their gender capability as mothers and don't realize it's an actual mental illness and just start questioning their abilities and capabilities, especially being Indian women?
Definitely. The symptoms vary greatly. And when I started talking about it, and I started talking about it with my mom, who obviously had me 35 years ago, and then she started talking to her friends who had children around the same time that she had me, and then they would share stories about locking themselves on the balcony and wanting to jump and all of these things that are normally kind of swept under the rug as, well, this is normal for early motherhood. But just because it's common doesn't mean it's normal, right? And just because it's common doesn't mean that it shouldn't be addressed. I think you hit the nail on the head with this starting to doubt your own capabilities and is something wrong with you as a mother and as a woman, especially in Indian culture, in which it's still seen as the pinnacle of womanhood to be a mother. And very few women actually have conversations around whether or not they want to be mothers. It's just a natural progression of what a life should look like in whosoever's eyes when you are a woman within more traditional societies. And so it is very, very easy to kind of start thinking, well, everybody would be better off if I could just pull it together, or alternatively, if I was not around. The problem is me. Something is wrong with me. And also a big problem is once you do share these kind of thoughts and the things that you have been going through, a lot of times you'll hear from older women in your families, this is just what motherhood is, suck it up. We've also had it bad, but we've sucked it up. We didn't talk about it. We didn't have to discuss this. When I was sharing this with my, and I, obviously, as you can see, I'm very open about it. And so I was saying this when we were all having lunch with my mother-in-law and brother-in-law and so on, and I said, this is so hard, and I had no idea it was going to be this hard. And she looked at me and she's like, but what is hard? You just have to feed them and then they sleep. So this idea that, firstly, obviously, she's also forgotten how hard it is to go through a newborn stage, but this idea that this is just a normal part of what being a woman slash being a mother is very deeply rooted, and that also isolates women who are going through this and brings them an even deeper layer of shame and guilt. And I just want to point out and just make it very, very clear that this has nothing to do with your capabilities as a mother. This is really a mental health issue. And there is help available, and you will be back on track to being the kind of mom that you can be and want to be. That being said, I'm almost 2 years out, and I still feel a tremendous amount of guilt for, and also rage for, being robbed of those first newborn days and months, especially since I'm one and done and I know I'm not going to get those newborn days again. I do still feel guilty for the thoughts that I was having, even though I know that they were not fully my responsibility. And I do feel a deep sense of loss over being robbed over those newborn days and weeks. So it's a very complex, long-term issue that still lingers even for me in the back of my mind, even after going through all that therapy and having all that support and coming out at the other end of it. Also, what's really important to note is that PPD can hit any time within the first couple of years of your child's life. So even if you're feeling that feeling of hopelessness, helplessness, and no light at the end of the tunnel when your baby is 6 months, 7 months, 10 months, or 11 months, it is still worth getting yourself checked for PPD and reaching out to your healthcare providers.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's deeply rooted in our culture to keep constantly telling women to suck it up and just normalizing struggle, which is very problematic. Like, nobody should have to struggle and be told that the struggle is normal, like you also said earlier. And I think they keep simplifying it as well, right? Like you said, motherhood is complex and there should be nobody that sort of simplifies that in any way. And I was also wanting to touch on the fact that you were able to get help, which is amazing. You were able to find the right therapist. Your gynecologist also gave you options of medication or therapy. And you also had a pediatrician who was able to sort of guide you, and you were able to speak to them about it. But I do think that there are a lot of women who still don't have the right resources or do not know to go to the medical professionals. So would you recommend that they talk to their gynecologist first? Say they don't have a good gynecologist, would you recommend that they just look for the right therapist? How does someone sort of go about trying to get help, or where exactly can they also find these resources if not directly from, say, their gynecologist or their pediatrician?
Yes, exactly. Normalizing struggle, but also participating in your own oppression by maintaining those structures that put other women down and keep them down and keep them in the depths of those struggles and the depths of those despair without any support. Now, when it comes to support, I think that me being able to access the help that I did as easily as I did, I have to reckon with the fact that that comes from a point of privilege, right? Firstly, my cultural background definitely helped, in which we are far from an advanced country when it comes to mental health issues, but definitely more open than India is. Secondly, being able to afford and also find the kind of gynecologist that has always been supportive and was very mother-centered in her approach of care, unlike other doctors who tend to be more baby-centered in their approach of care. And finally, when it comes to therapy, there are now plenty of options available online, but they all assume two things. One is access to steady internet, and the second is the ability to speak English, which of course that automatically disqualifies, or rather it's a high barrier to entry for a lot of women in India. I would encourage first women, every new mother's point of contact, first point of contact should be her own village, right? It takes a village to raise a child, and that village doesn't have to be biological. Surround yourself with groups of supportive mothers, young mothers like you, who are not in the business of comparing and judging, but are really, really supportive and understanding of the struggles and open about their struggles. And I know that in Bangalore, and I'm sure in at least in tier one and metropolitan cities in India, there are a whole bunch of WhatsApp groups for moms that tend to be very, very supportive. And nobody can understand what you're going through as much as someone who has also been going through that, or is going through that, or has gone through that very recently. And secondly, advocate for yourself. If you're shut down in your doctor's office, if you're shut down on your dining room table and in your family situations, you have to be comfortable with advocating for yourself and saying, no, I'm breaking the cycle here. I'm not going to suffer in silence. There is nothing shameful about me talking about it. There is nothing. The only thing why I'm doing this is because I deserve to be helped. And obviously, the spousal, or rather the support of the partner, if that is applicable to the situation, is crucial, crucial. And especially in those early days, there seems to be a kind of a thought process in India that fathers are not really that necessary in the early days, and they don't really have to be that involved because the baby needs the mother or the nanny or the nanny, right, more than the father. But if you are in a position where you do have a partner or a spouse, it is extremely important that they are also educated on what PPD and PPA are and how best to support you, and advocate for you if you are too deeply in your postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety to be able to advocate for yourself adequately. And this is, I think, where my husband has played an instrumental role, really, of advocating for me and making sure that I stay on track with my therapy and so on. So I would definitely say that if you are not happy with how your healthcare provider is treating your mental health or mental health issues in general, it's time to look for another healthcare provider. Tap into your networks of young mothers and your friends who have also gone through that or are going through that. The more you talk about it, the less shame there is, the more you will realize that you are not alone. And finally, there are many, many, many options now in India, a lot of mental health services that are being provided online. So if you do have the privilege of both internet access and English, it is very easy, well, not very easy, but definitely easier to get access to high quality maternal mental health services. Obviously, I have given birth during lockdown and I was in the worst of my depression during lockdown, so I couldn't have face-to-face therapy, which I think definitely would have been more helpful. But also, which new mom feels like she can leave for 1 hour to go talk about herself and her feelings and emotions, which is why I think that these online resources make access to healthcare more democratic, but also are very, very convenient for moms who are in the throes of the newborn stage and in the trenches of early motherhood.
I'm really glad to hear that there are actually quite a lot of support groups, because I think that is essential, like you said. And the fact that there are groups on WhatsApp, and most people in and around the country have access to WhatsApp, and they can probably look up for support groups on Facebook as well, if that's some sort of platform that they're more active on. And I think it's really important that you mentioned the need for women to advocate for themselves, that it is necessary to literally put their foot down and say no. Like you said, they need to break the cycle and they need to break their silence. So for all the women who are listening, I think you have a very good point and you're a great role model for having done that and actually continuing to do that. We need more women like you who are encouraging and being supportive of other women doing it, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to see change and see this sort of normalize, so women actually get the help that they need, because it is such a big problem. And the importance of having a supportive partner. So I think as much as we are reading about it and finding out about it, I think we also need to share this information with our spouses, with any of our family members for that matter, right? Because I think you can educate your spouse, but sometimes some people may not have one. So it's so important to be able to educate anybody that's sort of your support system. So yeah, I think just having the right people to help you through, even if you don't have the right medical professional and you're not able to switch, having that support system within your family or friends can help tremendously. So we'd already talked about the symptoms, about how severe they can get, but now I wanted to sort of get into how much of an impact those symptoms have had on your daily life. What's the impact that it's had on your relationships, be it with your husband, with yourself, with your community?
So I was barely able to function for a very long time. Actually, not a very long time. It seems much longer than it actually is once you're in the middle of it. But even though I had very supportive family and friends and so on, and especially my friend in Canada who had a child 3 years before me, and who has gone through all of that, and my mom, with who I have a very good relationship, and my husband, who really took on a massive chunk on taking care of both the baby and me in that period of time, I was barely able to function. And actually, everything that people were telling me seemed inadequate and seemed like it wasn't enough. But this is the trick that depression and mental health illnesses in general play on you. They make you feel like you are completely isolated, and they make you feel like, yes, everybody's thinking and saying all the right things, but they don't really understand, or maybe they're really judging me quietly behind my back and so on. So it really was a dark spot when it came to my relationships. I feel like especially for my husband, who was also thrown into the trenches of new parenthood, which is not easy for anyone, and then also having to take care of your wife while doing all of the grunt work of changing diapers, making bottles, making sure, supporting my breastfeeding journey and all of those things. And then plus on that, deal with a mental health crisis from your wife who has never shown any signs of depression and so on and was always extremely optimistic, was a very challenging thing. What it left us with, though, now in retrospect, is a much stronger, deeper understanding of each other and each other's needs and priorities, and a much stronger bond as a couple and as parents. I really saw how much I can lean and rely on him, which has been obviously amazing in continuing our relationship and strengthening our relationship as well. It made me more vulnerable, which is something that I have always struggled with. The openness, emotional openness and vulnerability, and showing kind of the struggle that goes behind the veneer. This has kind of forced me, without asking me if I want to or not, this has forced me to break that down, and that has something that has stayed with me, and I have stayed a lot more emotionally open and available, more open and available to ask for help, but also to reach out and hopefully to support other women and the friends in my network as well who are going through similar things. It is very easy to kind of blame yourself and isolate yourself from others, but connection actually is, like, I think is the one of the number one cures for postpartum depression and anxiety, is that human connection and that understanding, and someone just being there and saying, I'm here, I'm listening, and you're not a terrible person for feeling the things you're feeling and for thinking the things you're thinking. And I was lucky enough that I had a whole bunch of people who were providing that for me. But also it is very difficult for your closest family members and friends who want to help and want to fix. And this is not an easily fixable thing, at least not without professional help. And so everybody would be telling me things like, oh, you know, it's just 1 month or 2 months and then it's going to get better. But look at all the things that you can look forward to. But look at all the things, you got what you wanted. And that was the worst part, because I did get what I wanted. I actually really wanted my baby and I tried for it for a very long time. And that I thought that people were trying to fix me, but I wasn't fixable, was also very difficult. As when it comes to my personal relationship with me, like I already mentioned, there was definitely and still is a lingering feeling of guilt and kind of the unfairness of it all, but it also forced me to kind of bear it all in an emotional sense and peel some layers and work on some preconceived notions that I had about my own womanhood and motherhood and all of these other complicated, complex, intertwined things. And it kind of forced me to rethink certain thought systems and belief systems that I have held. So it was definitely an opportunity for personal growth as well, but an opportunity for personal growth that I would have preferred to skip, not one that I would have necessarily wanted for myself or for anybody else in that matter.
I mean, even though it was quite a struggle and that's not how one wants to sort of grow and evolve, I'm glad to hear that there was a silver lining and that your relationship with your spouse was strengthened and that you were able to be more vulnerable as well, because you said you'd struggled with it. So yeah, basically I think you are a reminder for everybody who's struggling with it that there is light at the end of the tunnel, that you should not feel so much guilt, and that you need to find the right system, support system, and the right professionals to really take you through it, to help you through it, because it is a mental illness that can be treated. I just really want to reiterate that, and I'm really, really grateful that you spoke about it. So thank you so, so much for shedding light on this and being so open and honest about your whole experience being a PPD survivor yourself. And yeah, I think it's been an incredible episode, possibly my favorite. I cannot wait for everybody, both men and women, to hear this and to help spread the word and normalize PPD.
Thank you so much for having me and for facilitating this conversation and for continuously working on breaking down the taboos within the society and shining the light on all of these topics. And I've greatly enjoyed this conversation. And thank you once again. Thank you so much for having me.